kissed a fond farewell to a friend who couldn't get things right. A fond farewell to a friend. This is not my life. It's just a fond farewell to a friend.
Elliot Smith on Pacifica Radio, Planet Waves FM, Fond Farewell from a Basement on a Hill. One story I didn't tell you about Chris was something I knew from when he was a younger man, which is that he had the job of taking care of a quadriplegic, a guy who couldn't move his arms or his legs. And somehow Chris gets the job of being his pretty much full-time caretaker. I imagine the family hired him. And this guy, I don't know his name, had one wish. He wanted to hitchhike across the United States. This had to be late 1970s. Late 1970s, I was a teenager. Yeah, so Chris was got to be in his young 20s. So 1970s, still a little like the 1960s. And Chris said, all right, let's go. Let's do it. And they hitchhiked coast to coast. This young guy had like a wide diversity of problems, including not being able to move his appendages. Chris had to feed him. He had to take care of all of his toilet needs, and they hitched across the country. And Chris would pick him up and put him in the car and fold up the wheelchair, and they would stop. The next ride, Chris would take him out of the car and open up the wheelchair and put him in the wheelchair, and they'd stick their thumbs out again. Yeah, that was my friend. Now, speaking of vaccines, I mentioned that I am certain that the COVID shots played a role in Mr. McGregor's demise. He didn't have me there to protect him. That was the thing. I somehow wasn't in touch with him during that particular era to warn him. And plus, they've got you in the hospital, and they're going to tell you all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. One of the mean, nasty, ugly things that the medical industry likes to tell you is that you're going to get cancer from sex. They claim it's human papillomavirus, and there is a vaccine that has been created that was introduced 19 years ago by Merck, publishers of the Merck Index, and this shot has been given to hundreds of millions of people, principally girls. If you go to the Wikipedia page, they say, and by the way, with Wikipedia, you have to know what issues you can trust them on and what issues you cannot trust them on. And there's a whole layer of Wikipedia that is completely owned basically by the corporate state. Deep state, corporate state, pharmaceutical industry, whatever the heck you want to call it. And one of them is everything related to vaccines. Gardasil is an HPV vaccine for use in the prevention of certain strains of human papillomavirus. It was developed by Merck and Company. High-risk human papillomavirus, HRHPV, genital infection, is the most common sexually transmitted infection among women. P.S., which doesn't make sense because it's allegedly not the women giving it to the women. Some women have sex with women, but most women have sex with men. The HPV strains, that continuing, that Gardasil protects against are sexually transmitted, specifically type 6, 11, 16, and 18. HPV type 16 and 18 cause an estimated 70% of cervical cancers and are responsible for most HPV-induced anal, vulva, vaginal, penile cancers. HPV types 6 and 11 cause an estimated 90% of genital warts, HPV 16, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all stated as fact. A couple of wrinkles on this. So many young girls have been injured, but they start giving this at the age of 9. I just looked, was on the Gardasil website. They start giving these shots at the age of 9, often without the consent or knowledge of the parents, and certainly without their informed consent. And so many of these girls have gotten totally disabled. It basically turns previously vibrant, healthy young girls into zombies in one day. Have the shot, and they become a zombie. I don't mean to be too harsh here, but that is the best metaphor that I can use to describe it. The response, and I've not read every word of this page, but I've glanced at the subject matter of every section, and they say adverse effects. As of 2014, 170 million doses of Gardasil have been distributed worldwide. The vaccine tested in tens of thousands of females 9 to 26. It does not contain mercury, thimerosal, live viruses, or dead viruses, but virus-like particles which cannot reproduce in the human body, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The vaccine has side effects such as pain around the injection area, fainting in adolescents. Patients remain seated for 15 minutes. There have been reports that the shot is more painful than other vaccines, and the manufacturer of Merck partly attributes this to the virus-like particles in the vaccine. General side effects of the shot may include joint and muscle pain, fatigue and weakness, so forth, malaise, and so forth. FDA and CDC said that within millions of vaccinations, by chance, some serious adverse effects and deaths will occur in the time following the investigation, but they have nothing to do with the vaccine. More than 20 women who have received the Gardasil vaccine have died, but these deaths have not been causally connected to the shot, as correlation does not imply causation. Pause. In statistical science, there is a point where correlation implies causation. It is a confidence factor involved. It has to be high, but it is not strictly true that correlation does not imply. It certainly implies potential causation, but when the correlation is so strong, it may not be in this case, but I'll tell you, they're claiming the deaths have not been causally connected. Small number of cases of Guillain-Barre system have been reported following Gardasil, but there's no evidence linking it to the vaccine. It's unknown why a person develops Guillain-Barre syndrome. FDA and CDC monitor events to see and so forth. But in 2009, the Spanish Ministry of Health suspended use of one batch of vaccine in the Valencia region after two girls had become ill after receiving the vaccine. No evidence, says Merck. Okay, so actually, there are a lot of injured and dead girls. There are so many that there is a lawsuit currently being litigated in the federal courts, which is called the Gardasil MDL, Gardasil Multi-District Litigation. Now, some years ago, 21, I think, we had on the program somebody named Renee, who is a vaccine injury VIP, vaccine injury program attorney representing vaccine-injured people in the Department of Health and Human Services Court of Claims that you sue when you're suing a vaccine manufacturer. Vaccine manufacturers are insulated from the first round of lawsuits. You have to sue in the vaccine injury program, and then after 9 months, whatever the disposition, yes, no, or nothing, it got delayed, you can then go to big boy court. And there are now, I imagine, hundreds of cases in the Gardasil MDL. Now, full disclosure, I have not fully done this story, but I have done enough of the story to have a sense of the story, and I know that it exists. And as it, I'll be probing into the issue now that I have brought it up on the program. It's not strictly why I'm here, but I am. It's a very important precursor to what I am saying. Okay, so apparently the first case in the MDL has gone to trial. But no, this is different. It's not the MDL. This is in California State Court, and it begins on January 21st, 2025, just in time. All right, so I'm reading from the law firm, the website of a law firm named Wisner Baum, one of the lead counsel in this case. So an MDL is not a class action. An MDL is kind of like a consolidated individual action case where the court consolidates discovery proceedings and depositions so that if there's 200 plaintiffs, the witnesses don't have to be deposed 200 times. And I believe it was, let's see, it was in 23 that I was in touch with Wisner Baum. And they, by the way, have props because they, I believe, are the ones that sued Monsanto over Roundup and won $1 billion settlement, I believe. Again, not looking at my notes, but they take on these very, very big corporate cases. And I was in contact with the press person at Wisner Baum. They have like a, you know, full-time person to handle people like me. And I said, if you are still in discovery on this case, put a motion in or in the a discovery request, ask Merck to provide their isolation study for the human papillomavirus. Essentially, I said, ask them to prove that the virus exists. She was intrigued. Now, I don't think that they did this because it's, while it is not that out there, it's a little out there, but certainly the dioxin attorneys that I covered in the 1990s would have certainly sought to discover the isolation study, because I said, they're not going to have one. They're going to produce a study, a paper, which documents a metagenomic transcript. Same with SARS-CoV-2 and every other virus. So when I wrote to Chris, October 22nd, that what they're calling SARS-CoV-2 originated as an AI, artificial intelligence, that's what they do, with a hypothetical sequence of nothing much at all called MN908947. The same thing was done with Gardasil. Because they don't have any isolation studies of viruses. They only have, by isolation, I mean actual isolation of the virus particle. Nothing else can be called isolation. They do this all with metagenomic transcription. They make up a sequence and they call it a virus, when in actual fact, the sequence that they have is purely hypothetical, and it has never been shown in none of these instances to come from a virus, match a virus, cause a disease, or be contagious. Now, that doesn't mean that people are not getting cervical cancers, but there's a very big deal made when the Pap test comes back with one of these species of alleged HPV, I guess 6, 11, 16, and 18. And they're doing cryo, they're doing cone cuts, and they're intervening. And the issue is that they've never found this thing. But what is more serious is that they are injecting hundreds of millions of girls around the world with this stuff. It is making them sick. It is killing them. And not only that, there's not actually a virus. So what are they inoculating against? It is all, and you, that doesn't, even if it, even if there were a virus and there were proteins, it's still a completely absurd idea. It sounds like a good idea. Oh, you put a little bit in, the body reacts, and so forth, and then the immune system can fight it. But this whole thing of a self-replicating virus that clones itself, and it hijacks a cell, it clones itself, and it jumps from cell to cell and instigates a disease, and then it jumps from person to person. And I know that there certainly appears to be contagious HPV. Let's talk to people. But what I am saying is something else, and here is where the knife must go into the issue. The logic must be, it must be split apart between the observed phenomenon and the claimed cause, and then the claimed prevention of the cause. That is this Gardasil vaccine. So I will prepare for the next program, the next full-length program in 2 weeks. I'll prepare a report on the Gardasil MDL. Now, my guest is Christine Massey. She's up tied probably for the most appearances ever on Planet Waves FM. And Christine Massey's role in this... In the shit show that grew out of 2019, meaning when they first announced their plans for COVID at the Milken Institute and Event 201 in October of 2019, what Christine and her colleagues around the world do is that they make Freedom of Information Law requests, open records requests to public agencies, and they ask them to reveal the studies in their possession that show that these viral entities exist. She's very specific how she does this, and the language is included on her website, and she's always evolving her language. And I have done a lot of work under the Freedom of Information Law, and I know how incredible this can be if you have the patience and you know how to work it. You can get a result, and she has gotten a result. So this interview happened on January 12th. We had to hold this over from last week. It's still fresh as a daisy. And so now I will leave you for the rest of the segment in the very capable hands of Christine Massey of Toronto, who will explain how it is she knows that nobody can establish the existence of human papilloma virus. Here you go. I'd like to welcome back to Planet Waves FM and Planet Waves TV honorary professor Christine Massey. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, you, Eric. Thanks for having me again.
Now, Christine, I have done some of my best work under the Freedom of Information Act, FOIL, New York State Freedom of Information Law. So I'm not unfamiliar with what you're doing, but I have to say, I don't come near you in what you're doing here on this, PGA Grandmaster level. You have basically been getting governments around the world. Now, I think you're up to agencies. And when I say governments, I mean governments, agencies, institutions subject to the Freedom of Information Law in various countries around the world, quite a few different countries, you know how many, to admit that they have no records about the existence of the very viruses that they do all these things to us based on those viruses as an excuse. Like, that's the amazing thing. I think that's why certain people miss the point of what you're doing, right? Because they say they don't have a virus. Big deal. They don't have a paper anywhere from anywhere showing it. But then they're the same agencies that take action based on the existence of the virus. Am I right here?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the whole point. They're the ones making these claims, and supposedly they have experts at these institutions, and it's their expertise, that the whole all the recommendations and in the
Mandates.
situation with COVID, they were exactly mandates, bullying, encouraging people to snitch on each other, all the extreme changes that they brought in, turning the whole world upside down, basically. They're the ones claiming to know these things, and they're marketing and encouraging people to get the tests and the injections, right? So these are the people that should have the evidence. I don't go asking a furniture store or something. I'm asking these institutions that claim to have experts and know what they're talking about.
Yep.
So.
And today, what caught my attention this week, and they all catch my attention, but is HPV, human papillomavirus. Absolutely crucial because they have now injected two generations of young girls and some boys with this drug that supposedly prevents cancer. That's the excuse, right? That HPV 16 and 18 are cancer-causing viruses, and they inject untold millions of girls. And now there's a lawsuit called the Gardasil MDL, Gardasil Multi-District Litigation, that is inching closer to trial. I don't know if you know about this, but
I've
a
heard about it from you a
big
little bit,
suit against Merck, a federal case, a consolidated action against Merck. And so that's why I'm keeping my eye on HPV. I know they don't have any studies, but you foiled the FDA, right? The Food and Drug Administration, which authorizes Gardasil.
exactly. The FDA, this is the institution that authorizes the tests and the injections. I think it's like the your version of Health Canada. Here we have Health Canada that does these things. They don't have any records either, by the way. And FDA is not the first institution that's been asked about this. I could bring up, I think we have Japan. We have a number of, I'm just going to check on my website. So there's so many FYIs now, it's hard to keep track of them. We have the CDC. We already had the CDC twice on record. Now we have the FDA. We already had Public Health Agency of Canada. We already had Japan's Ministry of Health, Labor and Welfare. Also Japan's National Institute of Infectious Diseases. In Denmark, two or three top, what are considered important institutions over there. One is a hospital. I don't know how to pronounce it. Dovre, no idea how to say it. Statens Serum Institute and the Danish Health Authority. Another word, I have no idea how to pronounce it. And then we have a lady in England who's helped us a lot. She's asked probably a dozen or more different municipal local institutions, like the neighborhood type institutions, where people actually go for the testing and getting injected, and nobody has any records. But yeah, with the FDA, these are the ones that you go to their website and they're the ones talking about whether, the test is effective or the injection is, supposedly safe and effective. That's what they claim to do. And yeah, they're the ones that should have the information. And you can't, like, it's just common sense, but I'll just, point out what should be obvious to everybody is if you don't have evidence that something actually exists, it's impossible to evaluate how effective a test is, right? For detecting something that's not, you don't even have evidence that this thing exists. Or if you want to see how well an injection works to supposedly prevent an infection of something, it's impossible. You can't do it when you can't even show that the thing exists in the first place. They not only do they not have a sample of this alleged particle themselves, but they don't have any record of anybody. I should explain like what I did in this most recent
Yeah, you've asked for four things,
request.
right?
Yeah, so I changed the way I used to do my requests because for years we have 225 institutions now on record from 40 countries where I was focusing on SARS-CoV-2, and my focus was always And a lot of other people helped with the project, by the way. It wasn't just me, of course. Focusing on whether they have any record of anybody on Earth ever finding the purported SARS-CoV-2 particle in people, and purifying it, because that's your first step. If you think that there's a particle that might be a virus in people, you need to find it. And to be able to identify it, meaning to sequence it, to characterize it, see how big it is, what's the density, what proteins does it have? You have to purify it, separate it from everything else so that you're not mixing in sequences and proteins and whatnot from other stuff. Like, that's just common sense. So that's what I was focusing on for years, and that's where we already had lots and lots of institutions on record, even for other viruses. But this year, I started trying to make it more clear for the general public, because not everybody's getting they're just not getting, like, just how important it is to find the particles, have them, purify them. So I started asking any record. It's a four-part request. So the first part is any record showing that the purported particles, the virus actually exists, meaning that you found the particles, you actually have the particles, you show the particles exist, and that they actually cause the illness that they're supposed to cause. I didn't even ask them, I didn't require them to also show that these alleged particles hijack cells and replicate. I left that part out because that would make it even harder for them, right? But so I kind of made it easier for them. So I asked for that, and then in part two, I say, well, and if you don't have that, do you at least have records where somebody found the particles and purified them? Just the first step that you need to do before you can sequence, characterize, and do valid, rigorous, controlled experiments. So that's the second part. The third part, I was asking, do you have any record of anybody ever finding the purported genome of this alleged virus intact? Not making up a hypothetical model on a computer out of millions of sequences from a soup.
Little
No.
snips
Yeah.
put together like Lego blocks. Ooh, look,
Right.
it's a battleship, you know.
Yeah. Millions and millions of them. That's what they do in virology. So no, I'm asking, do you have any record, just anybody ever just finding this supposed thing intact? And then the fourth part was, do you have any records showing that the symptoms or illness that's supposedly caused by the virus is actually contagious? Now, in a way, nowadays, what they mean by contagious, it's implying that there is a virus, that there's this microbe that gets passed around. So if they don't have those other parts, clearly they don't have that version of contagion. But they could even at least have studies where they show that people with these symptoms somehow, by some mechanism, make other people have those symptoms, right? So I'm trying to make it as clear as possible for the public. They don't have anything. We've covered all the bases, and there's just nothing, right? Nothing at all.
And if there were something, they could just send you a PDF of some
Yeah,
study from
they
the
should.
University of Ottawa or the University of Melbourne. Look, Dr.
Exactly.
Shmagegi found it. Here you go. Shut up.
Exactly. They would be happy to. Why would they not do it, right? Like, that's it's the oh, they know it looks bad when they can't do it, right? It looks really badly on them. So they should be more than happy and eager, like you said, to shut us up.
And this is fair. You see, I've read a lot of the comments from these blowhards, who are all probably watching now, and they like to say it's a trick question. It's not fair. And you're just like little old you in Toronto somewhere, and they're like a team of lawyers and scientists and PhDs, and you're really going to outsmart all of these people who are paid all this money for the last 20 years to do nothing but this all day long? Like,
Yeah, it's kind of funny. And like you said, yeah, it's just little old me, and I'm not doing anything super complicated. Like, it's literally just a regular woman who found out about something very simple issue, fact checked it, found out from Dr. Andrew Kaufman and Dr. Stefan Lanka, fact checked and just keep asking them and challenging them. That's all I'm doing. And
It's little
yeah,
kid
it's
level. I
it
think of
yeah.
this as little kid
Yeah.
journalism. You ask the
It's
question a little kid would ask.
yeah, it speak exactly. It speaks to just how what a house of cards they're actually running, what a scam, what a con, what a criminal enterprise they're actually running.
So you get
And
to know
they
these people somewhat. This is the funny part. Like you're kind of like a recidivist, frequent flyer,
Well, Sarah
and
and I go back now to January, 3 years now.
yeah, that's 1,000 days, right? That's getting old. So you seem to be familiar with this attorney named Sarah Kotler.
Yeah, Sarah J. Kotler. So the first time, I'll just give a quick rundown of like our history. So the first time I corresponded with her was back in January 2022. So this is when I was focusing on SARS-CoV-2 purification. And we were butting heads because she wanted me to fill in a form, and I don't like filling in forms. I just like to send the email, and she wouldn't budge, and I wouldn't budge. So it wasn't an official FOI response. But in our correspondence, she admitted that the records I was asking for would not be with the FDA. So that was the first time she's basically admitting, like, there's no chance they're even going to be here. Like, I don't even need to look. Kind of thing, right? So that was 3 years ago. And then I was focusing more on the CDC these last few years, where I was asking about other alleged viruses. But in this year, I start or this past year, 2024, I started focusing a little more on the FDA again. So in July 29, 2024, she responded regarding avian influenza virus. And this was again the four-part request, and in that one she admitted that they didn't have any records. And what she's been doing, maybe I'll just read a little bit because there's something that she keeps repeating in all of her requests or all of her responses for the other alleged viruses that I've asked about. So I'll just read her little blurb that she always includes. It says the FDA does not regulate or treat viruses. Maybe I'll read you what I responded to her.
It's the or treat or
Yeah.
treat. They
I know. Yeah. And
just
how do you?
approve like thousands of drugs that treat them, which don't treat them because they don't exist and they don't treat anything.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what I said to her, she says this every time. So, what I said to her in the most recent response, I said, no one can regulate or treat alleged viruses because they've never been shown to exist. Both the literature and literally hundreds of FOI responses from 40 different countries confirm this, as shown in the links below and in my notarized affidavit. Yeah. And I gave her my notarized affidavit, which is like 42 pages long, where I go over all. Summarize all the of the last 5 years, all these responses we've got from around the world. So then she says, the FDA is responsible for protecting the public by ensuring the safety, efficacy, and security of human and veterinary drugs, biological products, and medical devices, which again, obviously, you can't assess efficacy of something you don't even know exists.
A biologic product, that's interesting. Those are used on commercials. You don't have drug commercials in Canada, we have
No.
them. So they're saying it's a new biologic. And that's kind of like a drug that is not exactly categorized as a drug, but like is immune suppressing or something
Oh, okay.
like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and medical devices. So I guess that would include masks or I don't
Catheters and
ventilators. I
yeah.
don't know.
All that.
Yeah. And then
IVs,
she's
whatever.
so I responded, the FDA rubber stamps poisons like vaccines and is complicit in pseudoscience and deadly fraud. The nation's food supply is largely contaminated with filth of various sorts. I mean, how does anyone claim that they're ensuring the safety of the American food supply? That's just laughable at this point in history. And then she says, for general information on HPV, which she can't even show exists, sends me to a website. Yeah, so that's her little blurb that she gives. So yeah, going back to July of last year, that was avian influenza virus. She admitted they had no records. Then in August of last year, 2024, she responded regarding the alleged monkeypox. I'm just looking at my notes here. For that one, she admitted no records. She gave the response in a letter, but she's been doing something else interesting. And I don't know if this is worth mentioning, but I think it's interesting because she's been doing it consistently in the responses where she does give an actual letter with a so-called digital signature, which is it's just typed out name. She's signing it Sarah B. Kotler, followed by a minus sign and a capital S. I don't know what that's all about. I googled
Usually
it.
that means it's usually slash lowercase s,
Yeah,
which
this is
basically means digital
dashed.
signature. That means signed, but this is in digital format, so I can't sign it. I've
I
seen this
wondered if
going back
that's what it
many,
meant.
many, many years.
I googled. I couldn't find anything, but and I've
But
asked her
she's
a few
typing it
times.
weird. It's
She hasn't.
usually slash lowercase s.
Yeah, so maybe that's what it's supposed to mean. September 13th, regarding SARS-CoV-2, I revisited that alleged virus because I wanted to do the four-part request on that one just to make it more clear for everybody. That time she was evasive. She gave a letter, but she gave that blurb, but she didn't actually say whether or not they have any records. So she was just being evasive, but it was clear they didn't have anything to give. And then in November, I did one for any alleged virus of the Pax Viridae family, which apparently in Greece right now they're fear-mongering about Capri Pox virus, which is referring to goats. So they have
Capri pox,
goat pox virus,
Capricorn
sheep
pox,
pox.
ha
Well, they have a
Capri.
sheep pox virus. There's
It
all kinds
is.
of alleged viruses in this Pax Viridae family, and they even have one called lumpy skin disease virus.
Oh,
It seems like they're
ooh, I
inventing
hope I don't
alleged
get that.
viruses for almost every condition. They're going to come up with a virus. So for that one, she admitted they have no records, and now we're up to
Lumpy skin
the
virus.
HPV. What's that?
Lumpy skin
Lumpy
virus.
skin disease virus.
Their marketing department is working overtime. Madmen.
Yeah, so now we're at HPV. And so in the end with this one, she was evasive again. There was a long back and forth that I published if anybody wants to go through the details. Basically, she initially I was waiting months for the response. I followed up. She ignored me. I followed up again. Then she makes out that, oh, we already sent you the response. I say, no, you didn't. Okay, now I see the problem. Okay, I'll resend it to you. So she sends me an email and it's got the long blurb, but it's got everything. It's got claims about a virus and protecting the public, but it doesn't actually say whether or not they have any records. Which was funny because she'd already pointed out to me what their responses are supposed to include. So I wrote back and I said, you didn't actually respond, and basically she goes silent at that part. Oh no, and she ended up saying, when I called her out and I said, your email doesn't say anything as to whether or not you actually have records. You didn't actually answer my request. She backtracks and she says, well, we consider your request misdirected. So she basically now admitted that they didn't respond. They never had any intention of responding. And their excuse is that I shouldn't be asking them. I should be asking the CDC. So she essentially has refused to even answer, which I haven't read your legislation carefully there, but I presume she's in violation of the legislation there. Personally, I
By
don't
not
know.
saying we have it or we don't have it.
Yeah, you're supposed to give a response. She had already quoted in one of her earlier emails, she gave me a blurb about how they're supposed to say, whether or not they found responsive records, how many they found, whether they're going to give access fully or withhold everything. She already finished telling me that's what they're supposed to let me know, and yet she didn't let me know. And when I pointed it out, that's when she backtracked and said, oh, well, we consider your request misdirected. So she's refusing to answer, and it's very clear what, they're just playing games. And yeah, this is the institution for how many hundreds of millions of people you have in your country. These are the people that are supposedly, they're the ones rubber stamping these products that supposedly relate to a virus. It's a
Well, and this is
complete
very, very
combination.
dangerous product. Gardasil is turning these young women into zombies. They're fine on Monday, they go to the doctor, and on Tuesday, that's it. They're practically deep autistic, and they can't communicate.
Yeah, I don't know as much about it as you do, but I know that HPV is notorious. That's one that's known, I guess, right up there with the COVID injections. It's known for being just absolutely horrific. And I remember even years ago, way before the COVID operation started, seeing a study. I believe it was from it was a review from University of British Columbia, and I remember them explaining back then that this was years ago, and they were saying like, there's no actual evidence that it's actually effective at preventing cancer. They were talking about how the fact that they use a proxy, they can't actually see if it prevents a virus because a virus doesn't exist, and they don't actually look at whether it prevents cancer. They were just looking at the endpoint of, antibodies, this proxy that supposedly gives you information as to whether it prevented an infection, and from there they assume that, okay, if you're getting antibodies, that means it's going to prevent the cancer. Like they were saying years ago, they don't even have proper studies to evaluate it. And now we know what they can't evaluate it for, whether it prevents a viral infection.
I think the reason why she's so dodgy about this is because the Gardasil MDL is huge, massive, with like 50 or 70, I don't even know how many plaintiffs it's up to yet. And the longer it gets delayed, the more plaintiffs come on board, and it's like a massive federal case consolidated into one trial with the same group of experts. They don't have to keep having the trial over and over again. And at the beginning of 2023, when I thought it was going to happen in 23, I had a contact at Wisnerbaum who didn't like the fact that I had been covering Robert F. Kennedy and try to claim that I had a conflict of interest, which
Oh.
I do not have as a journalist. I only cover the guy who is signed on as one of the co-counsel on the Gardasil MDL, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.,
Okay.
the big anti-vax guy. But anyway, the one email I sent her that got her attention is I said, if discovery is still open, I suggest that you have the attorneys handling discovery ask them for their isolation study.
Yeah.
This would be a moment. It'd be a frameable moment. You don't want to print that thing out. I would, maybe you wouldn't want to. You people love it. Listen, I've got a big blank wall back behind me. I would print that out and hang it up, that one page of the deposition,
Yeah.
full size, because they're not going to be able to produce that document, and that would devastate them before the jury.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is well aware of this issue. He hasn't admitted, like as you've covered many times, he hasn't admitted that we're correct, but he also can't show that we're wrong. And he doesn't even try to cite a study to show that we're wrong.
But he has great respect for this guy, Tom Cowling in California,
Yeah.
who doesn't
Right.
think there's viruses. But that's, not, of course, not what I asked him.
And he encouraged Tom to keep going. You keep doing the work.
Yes.
You keep putting yourself out there. You keep getting called
Then
all
we'll
these
take credit
things.
when you get closer to your goal,
That's
is
exactly what he
basically
said.
what he said. You Buffalo soldiers, you guys go out there and you take all the casualties. And then we'll come swooping in and raise funds on the work you've done.
Anybody that wants to protect children and is in a lawsuit involving this, there's no justification. Why would you give them a free pass on having to prove the existence of a virus, especially when it simplifies everything? Like, obviously, they can't justify an injection when they can't even show that the supposed virus even exists. I mean, it's so obvious. And I have it, like I said, my affidavit. I'd be more than happy to give them my affidavit. They can use it in the lawsuit. It can show it's not just
Well, I'm
HPV.
actually, this is a good cue to reinitiate contact with them, and to suggest that they ask for this. I don't know if discovery is still open. It could be, but the judge can reopen discovery. And this guy Michael Baum, who's the one of the partners in what's called Wisner Baum, which is a L.A. based, God knows what's going on there, an L.A. based personal injury firm that is doing a number of these kind of lawsuits. I believe they won the case against Monsanto for glyphosate. I
Okay.
believe they were lead counsel on that, if I'm not mistaken. So I thought they had that. To me, gives them a good reputation.
Yeah, and like you're saying, like there must be, you would think, a mechanism for something so important when new relevant information comes to light, oh, look, here we have the FDA admitting, they were challenged. So I
And
would
they can't
think a
produce it.
judge would allow that new information to come in. It's completely relevant.
And this is Merck. Merck, if they're producing this anti-HPV product, they should be able to produce the thing that's showing HPV exists. Like if
Yeah.
you're selling Roundup, you can prove there's weeds. Right, I
Right.
don't think Roundup should be used as a weed killer, but at least we all agree there's
There's
weeds, which
weeds, yeah.
really are plants.
Yeah.
Most of them pretty friendly. So all it's all mind blowing. I mean, I grappled with the virus issue for years, and the thing that was throwing me off was, I mean, a couple of things. One was every time you ask a doctor, they give you a different answer. They have a different thing. Well, the body clears it. No, the body doesn't clear it. You're infected for life. You're not infected for life. And I trace some of my confusion about this back to reading Celia Farber articles in the early 1990s, because she would get all the way to the truth and then raise a cloud of confusion over it. And when I took myself off the HIV story in 92, to do the dioxin story, I had basically proven that HIV didn't exist based on normal medical journals. Normal American Journal of Public Health was a big one, JAMA. The studies, when you look at the studies and you put together the implications of all the studies, it was clear that they had a missing virus problem.
Really.
They couldn't get it to work like a virus.
And that was without relying on the Perth group or
No, none of that. I had
just,
never heard of the
yeah.
Perth group. No, it was just reading these basic epidemiological studies. I didn't know that the resistance went any further than Duisburg at that point. And meanwhile, you had ACT UP making quite a fuss, and that was good activism in its day, right? But they were demanding AZT. And then the whole lot of them. I wonder how many of those original ACT UP guys were killed by AZT. I bet a lot of them were. So,
Well, reminds me of the ivermectin issue
remdesivir,
now with the, yeah.
yeah, situation. So, I mean, this is, I think, some of the most important work that is happening, and it's one of a few different pillars holding up the situation. But what you're getting them to do is to make either these open admissions against interest, or in the case of Sarah, dancing around till everyone's dizzy.
Yeah, and it was very obvious this time. It was by the end of the conversation, it was obvious she had done it deliberately. 1 minute she's saying, "Oh, we already sent it to you. Oh, here it is again," and then she's saying, "No, we're not going to answer you." So yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Well, say hello to Michael Baum. I'm going to do my best to get this video into his hands or somebody close to him, because I think this is the winning card on this issue, that they can't show that there's a virus in the first place.
Yeah, and just so that people know too, like I've now my newsletters, I have an email list. It has almost 200 people on it. It's just random from different emails over the last few years where I pulled off email addresses to either people in the mainstream media or government, people who work in so-called government in Canada, the US, England, and the Isle of Man, various people. And all of my newsletters go to them. And then I do my Substack. And then after I do my Substack, I have another manual emails that I do from my fluoride-free peel email address. I have to do it in batches because I can't send it to everybody at once. And I have on there, I have now, I went to the directory for the so-called Canadian government and pulled out a bunch of email addresses for people at Public Health Agency of Canada, the scientists, microbiologists, this sort of thing. I've got my emails are going to Theresa Tam, the top people supposedly at the Public Health Agency of Canada, people in the judicial system, judges, it's going to lawyers, it goes to Robert F. Kennedy and Children's Health Defense. I send this information to lots and lots of people. You know, obviously I can't send it to the whole world, but it's going out to a lot of people. So it's not like I'm just publishing it and not, you know, trying to get it out to into the hands of some of these people. So, and I've created
No,
a
there's the
record.
problem. They all know it.
The one group
They
with the
all know it.
almost 200, I published that in my Substack. I put the link so people can see. I'm creating a record to show, like, not only are there institutions failing over and over and over and over and over again to show that they have any evidence, but I've been sending it to them so they can't claim later that, oh, we had no idea. So.
Yeah, good. Well, listen, ongoing fantastic work.
Thank you.
Pluck up, keep your sense of humor. I know it's got to get tiresome.
Yeah. Thank you for. You don't know where you get all the energy to keep going over and over it.
Yeah, I mean, I do a few other things. I mean, like on tonight's Planet Waves FM, the musical guest is Sting. So I had to listen to, as part of my really hard job, I had to play a lot of Police and Sting songs. So I make sure that I keep my life diversified and colorful. And then when I've got to hunker down for 3 weeks and write about Jimmy Carter and the Trilateral Commission, I have a good time doing it, which we've been doing. So,
Excellent.
all
Thank
right,
you, Eric.
Christine, always fun to talk to you. And again, thank you. You have risen to the top of my list of journalistic heroes, and it is a very short list, I've got to say. No, it's like you're quite lonely up there. I mean, there's like you can hear the wind blowing and the tumbleweeds are going by. There's not a lot of people on this list, but I think you're doing it the most elementary, straightforward way. I called, you asked a little kid question, and if they can't ask the little kid question, they got nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Good. So, all
Thank
right,
you, Eric.
love.
Talk to you soon. Love you.
Yeah,
Take care.
bye for now.
Goodbye.
Gonna know you now, but I'm